readers, welcome to the Book Report. I'm your host, Elaine Charles, and wow, it's hard to believe the year is flying by. The summer solstice is next week. Days at the polar beach loom large, and maybe, just maybe, like me, the fear of donning a bathing suit looms large too. As your literary guide, I say it's the perfect time to begin a program of summer shape-ups. Body, mind, and soul. Your love life, kids, career, your financial, physical, and emotional fitness. There are so many inspiring titles out there. I'm psyched. So let's get started.
Traditional advertising can be expensive and wasteful. But lately, you've been hearing a lot about social media and viral marketing. But let's be honest, it's confusing. That's why you need Magic Buzz, a new marketing company so unique, we've even coined a special phrase for what we do. Socio-viral. We combine the word-of-mouth friendliness of social media, like Facebook, Twitter, together with the viral reach power of YouTube, to create the socio-viral effect. The Magic Buzz team makes sure our clients are well represented online. We recently took word-of-mouth advertising to the number one position as most productive medium for a major cell phone company. That's right. Magic Buzz produced more sales than an expensive TV campaign at a fraction of the cost. Put the power of socio-viral marketing to work for you. Visit us at magicbuzz.com. MagicBuzz.com. If you have any questions, please feel free to email us at info@magicbuzz.com. Magic Buzz, we're there when you can't be.
Given the volatile state of the world, it is no coincidence that superheroes have captured our imagination like never before. In the Seven Spiritual Laws of Superheroes, Harnessing Our Power to Change the World, New York Times bestselling author Deepak Chopra, with his son Gotham, author and co-founder of Liquid Comics, look at the way the magical power of superheroes challenge the laws of space and time. They offer us a vision that the world can change. By exploring the boundaries of energy and awareness, allowing us to better understand ourselves and our potential, superheroes can help us save the planet in a very real way. From Buddha's search for truth to Batman's struggle with his dark side, the book decodes the seven essential laws that govern the realm of superheroes, both ancient and modern, cosmic and commercial, and explain their relevance, importance, and perhaps most critically, how to apply these to our daily lives. These seven new transformative laws help us uncover greater happiness, courage, balance, creativity, compassion, and purpose in our lives. Each law has the potential to awaken us to our own superpowers. The book is narrated by A.J. Mehta.
When my children, Malika and Gotham, were growing up, we had a ritual every night before they went to sleep. I would tell them a story, usually some sort of mythic tale involving good versus evil, nature, or talking animals. At some point that qualified as a cliffhanger, where the story reached a climactic stage in which the central character had to confront a nemesis, face some dramatic challenge, or make a critical decision, I'd stop. I'd then ask them to dream up the ending overnight with as much drama as possible. With those instructions, they'd go off to sleep poised for an adventure. In the morning, when they woke up and climbed into our bed, I'd ask them to tell me about their dreams. I'd listen patiently as they narrated the quests they'd been on. I was amazed at their fertile imaginations and the magnificent journeys they went on in the midnight hours. Frequently, their stories reminded me of the great myths of humanity, those epic stories of good versus evil, romance and drama, betrayal, loyalty, conflict, conquest, virtue and vice, many emotions and experiences that they themselves had not yet confronted in their young lives. Were their innocent minds tapping into the deep reservoir of the collective imagination? The great Swiss psychologist Carl Jung made us aware of the collective unconscious and its archetypal symbols. Myths exist in this Akashic field, or a non-local plane of existence, where information, and in this case, the collective imagination, is stored and from which it gets recreated generation after generation. Myths are the closest we can come to conceptualizing the non-conceptual, the infinite. They are the highest expression of the finite, of striving to articulate the infinite. These tales are primordial. They capture the transcendent and then cloak it with beginnings, middles, and ends. Often the stories are similar, but take on modern masks and costumes. They have a simple plot and compelling characters, and often depict the eternal struggle between good and evil, the sacred and profane, the divine and diabolical. The good guys keep winning, but never really win. The bad guys often lose, but occasionally give the impression that they've won. In truth, neither side ever really wins or loses, and the story never ends. This is the dance between creativity and inertia, between evolution and entropy. Later, as the kids grew up, when I traveled back from my ancestral homeland in India, I'd bring them suitcases full of native comics that retold the great epics of our Indian heritage. This, of course, further stimulated their imaginations, since the great stories of countless gods and goddesses, emperors and conquerors were so vividly depicted in the pages of those comics. I like to think that all of this played a very strong role in the fact that both Malika and Gotham have grown up to be great storytellers.
The surest path to true happiness lies in being intimately concerned with the welfare of others, or, as the Dalai Lama would say, in compassion. How to Be Compassionate by His Holiness the Dalai Lama, edited, translated, and narrated by Jeffrey Hopkins, reveals basic mistakes of attitude that lead us to inner turmoil. The Dalai Lama demonstrates how opening our hearts and minds to other people is the best way to overcome misguided ideas at the root of our problems. He shows us how compassion can be a continuous wellspring of happiness in our own lives, and how our newfound happiness can extend outward from us in even wider and wider circles. Several years ago, I was fortunate to attend a college commencement ceremony where the Dalai Lama was to speak. As in all such ceremonies, the graduates marched down the aisle in their robes and mortarboards. The Dalai Lama was at the end of the procession. As he walked by my spot in the auditorium, I felt a surge of pure energy. It was startling. I looked at my friend next to me. She had felt it too. I kid you not, it was amazing, and I will never forget it. The Dalai Lama writes, as we become more compassionate human beings, our friends, family, neighbors, loved ones, even our enemies will find themselves less frequently in the thrall of destructive emotions like anger, jealousy, and fear. With simple language and clarity, His Holiness makes evident, as never before, that the path to global harmony begins in the hearts of individual women and men. Enlivened by personal anecdotes and intimate accounts of the Dalai Lama's experiences as student, thinker, and political leader, How to Be Compassionate gives seekers of all faiths the key to becoming agents of positive transformation in our communities and the world at large.
The Dalai Lama's full name, translated from Tibetan into English, syllable by syllable, is Leader, Holiness, Gentleness, Renown, Speech, Dominion, Mind, Goodness, Primordial, Wisdom, Teaching, Hold, Vastness, Ocean, Being, Triad, Controlling, Unparalleled, Glory, Integrity. In Tibetan, this is Jedzun Jambel Ngawang Losang Yeshe Denzin Gyatso Sisum Ongyur Tsungba Mebe Debel Sangbo. Here is a poem I wrote in the mid-1970s, inspired by the Dalai Lama's name. Leader of the world recognized for true holiness, gentleness personified in persuasive renown, speech of compassion pervading the planet in its dominion. Mind of altruistic endeavor, reaching all in its goodness. Primordial in the depth and range of profound wisdom, teaching and compassing all phenomena in its hold, vastness of love's deeds rippling throughout life's ocean, being so merciful displayed in suffering's triad, controlling the unruly through kindness unparalleled, glory in forms of endeavor sealed in total integrity.
Many self-help books offer a lot of New Age platitudes and sappy mantras. Just love yourself. See the glasses half full. Believe it and it will come. Really? Sadly, that's not how it works. In Unlimited, How to Build an Exceptional Life, author Jillian Michaels explains that a lifetime's worth of struggle is not overturned in a small moment of positive thinking. But if you have the right attitude and skills, you can and will accomplish anything and everything you want. This book gives you both attitude and action. By its end, Michaels claims you will have the tools you need to change your life. You will learn how to cultivate your passion and embrace your uniqueness, transform suffering into peace, wisdom, and strength, work through fear, worry, shame, and negative self-talk to blast through obstacles and create self-confidence, take powerful, informed, deliberate actions to make your dreams a reality. Forget surviving. It's time for you to thrive. Michaels, who also narrates the book, proclaims that your possibilities are unlimited. Reader reviews are pretty strong on this book, so you might want to give it a try. Here goes.
What I do is not about fitness. Exercise is just one of the tools I use to help people rebuild their lives. If you referred to an architect as a sketch artist, they'd look at you like you were an insane person. Architects help people build homes. Sketches are just one tool they use to do it. Well, that's what fitness is to me. A tool I use to help you build a life. It's never been just about the sit-up. Even my fitness bestseller, Making the Cut, is at its roots all about striving for excellence in your life, not just at the gym. So here we are, with a life to build and no exercise routines to suffer through. Don't panic, we won't need them. This is about being healthy in all aspects of your life. If getting physically healthy is your focus right now, check out one of my last three books. This book is about everything I do with my contestants behind the scenes that never makes it into the episode cut for TV. Well, maybe some of it on Losing It. It's about the quieter but necessary steps for transformation, the nuts and bolts of what I do to be successful in my own life, and the tools I use to help others get there as well. It isn't about calorie counting or ab crunching. It's about self-exploration and discovery. All you need to begin is courage, conviction, and faith, both in yourself and in me as your guide. Sure, at first the faith in yourself part is hard, but that's where I come in. See, I don't just hope you can do this. I know you can. Lean on me while you get stronger. And trust me, you have unlimited potential and the ability to fulfill it. We all do. It's just that some of us know it and some of us don't. Now get ready, because it's time to stop being quiet and desperate. Screw surviving. It's time to thrive. Unlimited health, wealth, and happiness are just waiting for you to claim them. I can't promise you it's going to be easy. Think about it. Nothing worthwhile ever is it? Achievement doesn't come without risk and sacrifice. But what I can promise you is that I will cut out the crap and tell you what works. So come with me on this journey, and your life will change dramatically for the better. So let's dig deep, get our hands dirty, and do this. Step one, imagine. This is one hell of a journey you're beginning. In fact, it'll probably be the most important, challenging, and rewarding thing you ever do. But as I'm sure you know, every journey, no matter how huge, begins with a single step. So, what is that first step in taking control of your life and beginning to live the way you're meant to live? Simple. Notice I didn't say easy. Your first step is to let your imagination run wild. To live the life of your dreams, you have to know what those dreams are. So in step one, I'll teach you how to get a firm grip, mentally and emotionally, and yes, even spiritually, on what it is you want out of life. This is the fun part. This is where you get to kick aside any ideas that may have taken root about your life being set in stone on its current path, or about your not being worthy of a truly great life. The title of this step really says it all. This is where you get to imagine everything you have ever wanted your life to be. Chapter 1, Identify Your Passion, or What the Hell Do You Want to Do with Your Life? If you've picked up this book, chances are you're looking for a change. You may feel like something is missing from your life, but you don't know what it is. Or you may be stuck in a rut, waking up every morning wondering how you're going to make it through another day. If this is you, I'm so glad you've come to me, so I can tell you in as many ways as I know how that that is not what your life is supposed to be. We're all born with the desire and the right to be happy. But somewhere along the way, many of us got conditioned by family, friends, religion, society at large, whoever, to believe that the human condition is predominantly one of suffering. And if we're not happy, it's just because that's the way things are.
Does science hold the answer to creating change in our lives? This is what our guest, Kim Marcel Romaner, sets out to explore in The Science of Making Things Happen, Turn Any Possibility into Reality. Entrepreneur, speaker, and consultant, Kim, an old friend of mine from our Miami Herald days, is now the founder of Possibilities Amplified, Inc., a company that teaches you how to apply science to accomplish your dreams, whether you are focused on career, relationships, even fitness. Kim applies her 25 years in business leadership as a technologist, strategist, and innovator, and offers high-voltage motivation and really a step-by-step program to changing and amplifying your life. Welcome, Kim. It's great to have you with us today.
Thanks, Elaine. It's great to be here.
All right. I'm a liberal arts girl. In school, science made me sweat. Tell me why this is the book for me.
Well, science is about how things work, right?
Yes.
And some of the latest scientific discoveries, things that most people aren't even aware of, are teaching us or could teach us more and more about how the universe gets things done and how that's personally relevant to us and how we fit into that picture. Because we can benefit by using some of the same methodologies that are already in play in the universe to amplify possibility, the stuff of our dreams, into reality. So it's a lot of fun.
Okay. I love your wave mode questions, those that begin to move someone into the realm of possibility, like if this could work, how would it work? If I started today, what would I get done by the end of the week? How did you begin to work these out?
I feel as if it's come actually from my consulting background. I have helped people and businesses discover new possibilities for achieving their desired results for a really long time. And this discovery process was something that I could do, looking at their issues from the outside. And it became clear to me that I could help them by teaching them the process rather than just applying the process. But it really all got started for me, I think, back in 1993, when I had a head-on collision with an 18-wheeler. And it changed my life. It really changed my perspective. I was quite seriously injured. 2 weeks prior, my husband of 8 years and I had split up and he moved out of the house. And so now I was a single parent of a 3-year-old boy. And I had no disability insurance. I had no airbags in my car. And it took me a long time to recover from that whole conflagration of events. And I remember sitting on my patio one night looking at the sunset saying, I know that I'm lucky because I get to have another life. And then it occurred to me that I could have as many lives as I wanted and I could design them in any way I wanted. And that vision, seeing those possible future lives lying before me, almost sparkling like gems, that's the way it seemed to me at the time, was very inspirational. But at the moment, I had no idea how I was going to make it happen. And so I began a quest to discover how to turn possibility into reality. And I spent about 15 years studying it, and the result is this book.
All right, so let's jump right in. Describe the Possibility Amplification Program, Amplification Program.
Yeah, so it's five discoveries from science that starts out with the creation of a vision. Because if you're not sure what you want, the universe isn't either. It's going to be very hard for the universe to help you amplify your dreams into reality if you're wishy-washy about them. I think most people suffer from a syndrome called fuzzy future. So we have to get clear. So the first step is clarity. And this is based on the science of the power of observation. When we observe subatomic particles, they behave differently than when we're not watching. And so we can apply the power of observation, that is an observation of our desired future, to create that future. Secondly, we need to be able to use the power of the chaotic system that is our brains. And this is about feeding that chaotic system the right inputs so that you can get the right outputs. Third, you want to make sure that you're personally aligned with that. And this is about your beliefs. And our beliefs really do hold us back so much. So how can we manage our belief system to create the internal environment we need to be aligned with what we're trying to create rather than causing friction on our creation process? And that comes from the science of epigenetics. And that's probably the most amazing science. I'm happy to go into that in detail. Next is decoherence, which is the universe's method for turning quantum possibility into this three-dimensional reality we call home. And you can ride the coattails of that process. And lastly, the inverse Zeno effect, which is the science of using measurement to accelerate results. And that, again, is from quantum science. So that's the process in a nutshell.
All right, so let's start to break this down. What is epigenetics?
Epigenetics is the study of forces that are even more powerful than your DNA. And there was an experiment on the cover of every science magazine on the racks in December of 2006, but most people still don't know about it, which demonstrated that by changing very simple things in our environment, we can actually cause genetic change from one generation to the next. And now we're becoming aware that we can cause genetic changes, and we are, in fact, during our lifetimes. And so once we get a handle on how to do that deliberately, it's going to be very, very powerful.
Can you share a tip or two on how you could change?
Well, I can tell you that, for example, children that are raised in abusive environments are much more susceptible to stress than kids who are not. And we see the same stuff mirrored in the animal world, where rat pups that are licked more by their moms in a calmer environment, their hippocampuses in their heads grow larger, and they have more of the hormones that are calming, whereas rats that are not licked often by their moms are skittish and more nervous. So raising your child in a calm environment is one way to turn on and off those genetic markers.
Okay, what is decoherence, and how can we use it to create our own reality?
Decoherence, as I mentioned, is the universe's method for turning quantum possibility into reality. And the way that happens is the universe selects possibilities out of all the quantum possibilities that are available, selects the ones that are the most robust and stable. And what makes a quantum possibility robust is that it has a lot of information about it in the environment. And what makes it stable is that information is in the environment over time. And so when we want to turn our possibilities into reality, we need to put out a lot of information about them. So we need to really think about them, visualize them, talk about them. You know, I like talking about your dreams. Some people tell you to keep them to yourself. When you talk about them, other people will help to replicate those informational records, if you will, and get more and more information about your possibilities becoming reality into the environment. And also write about it and take action on it. So this is really where you shake it up and where all the action happens.
Can you give us a small example of maybe how this worked for you or one of your colleagues?
Well, sure. So I can give you a general example, too. If you, for example, want to write a book, this is the way to do this. I mean, I started going to writing conferences and book publishing conferences and telling people that I was going to write a book. And I had actually a business forum group there in Miami called the Commonwealth Institute. And I told my group there that I was going to write a book. And every time they saw me, they'd say, "Hey, how's that book coming?" And it began to create a momentum in the universe that really said that this book was going to get written, that it was going to get published, and that it was going to be distributed. And so I hired an editor. You know, once you make that financial commitment, you know, so I'm putting out more and more information saying this book is going to get written. My editor introduced me to an agent. My agent found my publisher. And it just began. Once you get the momentum of the universe going, it will take you over. And in fact, it'll feel like it's going too fast. But you have to ride that wave because it's going right where you want to go.
All right, I see. Okay, what is the inverse Zeno effect?
Quantum physicists have discovered that when they measure subatomic activity, they can either slow it down or speed it up depending upon how they measure it. And the same thing is true in our lives as well. For example, have you ever said something to yourself like, "Oh, I can't believe I just did that," or "What an idiot"? You know, I mean, people, we take measurements of ourselves every day, all day long. And unfortunately, being human, most of those measurements are negative. And when we're taking these negative measurements, do you think those sorts of measurements are going to get us to our goals faster or slow us down?
Right.
So we're slowing ourselves down. We're creating friction on the bottom of our own boat. And so what I recommend to my audiences and my readers is, to try a tool called the inverse Zeno report, in which every day at the end of your day, and some folks I know actually use this in the morning, write down every contribution that you've made during a day. And at first it'll be slow. You'll have to think about it because we don't normally think about ourselves in that way. What have I done today that's been really, really good? So it's a good exercise just to get your brain into that space. And as you go along, you're going to get faster and faster because you'll start to see the things. And once you've got this list, first of all, it's going to make you feel really good, but it's also going to align you measurement-wise with where you're going, that you are making a contribution, that you are making progress. And it's been very helpful to the folks that have used it.
All right. So as a little fun, how can someone amp up their love life or relationship?
Ooh, well, using the same process. I mean, I write about in my book that, when I was divorced at the time of my accident and was seeking a new partner. And I was single for a long time, and you know that about me, Elaine.
Yes.
I dated, but not for very long with anybody in particular. And I wrote a vision of the person that I wanted to find. And after I got more and more into this process and had it ingrained in my own mind, it occurred to me that my vision was really an anti-ex-husband vision. And that is not really what I was trying to create. And once I was able to let go of that and rewrite my vision in a way that was about the future rather than the past, everything started to happen for me. So, but again, it was about getting clear about what I was looking for and being willing to say no to everything else. And there's just a ton of examples in the book, because the first part of the book is about the science and its personal relevance and how it's going to be applied. The second half of the book applies specifically to amping up your wealth, amping up your career, amping up your love life, amping up your connection to the community, and so on. So there's a lot of great stuff in the love and relationship chapter there.
Yeah, I have to say the book is really it's really well written, and you just kind of flow along and turn the page. It's great, Kim. One thing I was wondering about, especially when you were talking about fuzzy future and so on, do you think your book resonates as well with recent college grads as it will with someone who's worked for 20 years and taken their lumps and bumps in a corporation? Or, I mean, who are you writing it for, actually, or for all?
You know, I have to tell you that I feel like it's a little bit geared towards women. I have one of my biggest causes is to help women empower themselves. And so I would say that I, you know, when I targeted the book, I think it is more of a female bent. But I can tell you that I have men who read it and who are applying it. For example, I have a financial advisor in Houston, Texas, Phil Murad, who we chat all the time. His revenue was up 247% in January, and he credits that to using my process. And at the same time, I have an artist in Las Vegas who also is getting excellent results, you know, life-wise and otherwise, business-wise. And yet I have a young actress that I connected with on Facebook who's reading my book and thinks it's brilliant. So, you know, I feel like I'm touching a lot of people with this because science is universal, really, mm-hmm. and everybody can use it.
Mm-hmm. And where will we find your book? All over in bookstores or look for it online? What's the easiest way to find it?
Well, for sure, you can find it on Amazon. You can also find it on my website, which is www.possibilitiesamplified.com. That's possibilities, plural, amplified, past tense.com. Sorry for all the letters.
No, that's okay.
And it is in some bookstores, I know. It is in my local Barnes & Noble, and it has been distributed around the country. So. Mm.
Well, as I say, I really enjoyed reading it, even though the word science in the title, as I say, made me sweat. But I got over that very quickly after page one. So congratulations, Kim. It's great to speak with you today.
Thanks. You too, Elaine. Take good care.
All righty. Bye. Got a business colleague who is hostile, a client who is furious, a staffer who is deeply cynical. How do you get to these people? In Just Listen, discover the secret to getting through to absolutely anyone. Veteran psychiatrist and business coach Mark Golston reveals the secret to how to connect, even when productive communication seems impossible. Here's the challenge, Golston says. People have their own needs, desires, and agendas. They have secrets they're hiding from you. They're stressed and often feeling like they're in over their heads. To cope, they throw up barricades that make it difficult to reach them, even when your goals are in sync with their own. But the good news is there are simple strategies that can break down walls. Just Listen presents effective tools and techniques you can use whenever a job, a sale, or a relationship hangs in the balance. How effective are these techniques? One of the author's areas of expertise is training the FBI and police hostage negotiators to handle life or death situations. The same tips I teach these professionals for building empathy, de-escalating conflict, and gaining buy-in will work in any situation, the author says. Whether you're a new employee fresh out of school, a salesperson, or a CEO, once you master these skills, you can take them wherever you go. The book is narrated by Walter Dixon.
I could persuade defiant executives, angry employees, or self-destructing management teams to work cooperatively toward solutions. I could get through to families in turmoil and to married couples who hated each other's guts. I could even change the minds of hostage takers and desperate people contemplating suicide. I wasn't sure what I was doing differently from everybody else, but I could tell it worked. I knew I wasn't smarter than everybody else, and I knew my success wasn't just luck, because what I did worked consistently, and it worked with all kinds of people in every type of situation. But why did it work? In analyzing my methods, I found the answer. It turned out I'd happened on a simple, quick set of techniques, some I'd discovered on my own and others I'd learned from mentors and colleagues, that create traction. That is, they pull people toward me, even if those people are trying to pull away. To understand this, picture yourself driving up a steep hill. Your tires slip and slide and can't grab hold, but downshift, and you get control. It's like pulling the road to meet you. Most people upshift when they want to get through to other people. They persuade, they encourage, they argue, they push, and in the process, they create resistance. When you use the techniques I offer, you'll do exactly the opposite. You'll listen, ask, mirror, and reflect back to people what you've heard. When you do, they will feel seen, understood, and felt, and that unexpected downshift will draw them to you. The powerful techniques you'll learn in this audiobook can move people rapidly and easily, often within minutes, from no to yes. I employ them every day to fix broken families and help warring couples fall in love again. I use them to save companies on the brink of meltdown, get feuding managers to work together effectively, and empower salespeople to make impossible sales. And I use them to help FBI agents and hostage negotiators succeed in the toughest situations possible when life and death are on the line. In fact, as you'll find out, you have a lot in common with hostage negotiators when it comes to reaching the people who don't want to listen to you.
Have you ever felt invisible, taken advantage of, reluctant, or unable to articulate what you really want? If so, join the club, the Nice Girls Club. Nice girls, that's right, girls, are those who are more concerned with pleasing others than with addressing their own needs. Nice girls just don't get it. 99 Ways to Win the Respect You Deserve, the Success You've Earned, and the Life You Want by Lewis Frankel and Carol Froehlinger. This book helps turn nice girls into winning women. That is, women who factor their own needs in with those of others, confront those who treat them disrespectfully, maintain healthy and mutually beneficial relationship with appropriate boundaries, and as a result, are happier and more successful in every area of their lives. In 2004, Lois Frankel blew the lid off so many of our long-held ideas about gender and success with her best-selling Nice Girls Don't Get the Corner Office. Now, Frankel teams up with negotiation expert Carol Froehlinger to bring this best-selling advice out of the workplace and to provide a broader set of skills that any woman, whether a CEO or a stay-at-home mom, can use to win anywhere with anyone. Ladies, are you intrigued? I am. Let's listen as Marguerite Gavin narrates.
If you often feel invisible, taken advantage of, treated less than respectfully, or at a loss for how to get the things you most want in life, join the club, the Nice Girls Club, that is. Nice girls are women who hold themselves back in life by conforming to the stereotypical behaviors they've been socialized to believe are necessary for survival. These are women who unwittingly sabotage relationships in their romantic lives, with family members, at work, or with just about anyone else, and as a result, fail to get the things they want most out of life. As women, we're bombarded throughout our lives with messages that try to convince us that being nice is more important than getting the things we want. Even if no one has ever said this to you explicitly, we're guessing you've most likely absorbed the message that putting your needs first will land you on the bitch list. Here's an example of how messages from childhood can hurt you in the present. Cheryl is a manager in a large aerospace firm. She's well-respected at the office, but she's still treated like a child by her parents. As a single woman, at holiday get-togethers with family, she is expected to sit at the children's table because there isn't enough room at the dining room table for all the adults. Needless to say, it's something that bothers her greatly, but she doesn't know what to do about it. When she suggested that it was time for her to be seated at the adult table, she was told that she was being overly sensitive. So now she holds her tongue and goes along for the sake of getting along, not wanting to ruin family gatherings. Reluctance to make waves has impacted her at work as well as at home. She's known as an affable and easygoing woman, but is not considered high potential because she won't express opposing opinions, even ones that could help the company to grow. Being a nice girl has gotten her to where she is, but it won't let her get to where she wants to go. The messages she received in childhood and now carries into the present are getting in the way of her ability to accomplish her adult goals. Childhood behaviors, whether learned from implicit parental expectations or explicit demands, pervade every aspect of our experiences as women, from being unable to leave an abusive relationship to being immobilized in a career, to being reluctant to question a physician about a prescribed course of treatment. Nice girls are more concerned with how others may react or what others may think of them than they are with their own well-being. Don't get us wrong. Being nice is important, but niceness alone will not get you what you want out of life. Being kind, considerate, and generous is an ingredient for success in every endeavor or interaction, but it's simply not sufficient. We know from years of personal and professional experience that you can reach your personal and professional goals and do it nicely. It's not an either-or proposition. Winning women are women who have learned how to win the respect they deserve, the success they've earned, and the life they want without being labeled a... By things, we don't mean only tangibles, such as a new home, a good deal on a car, or a better job. We mean creating situations where your voice is heard, your needs are met, and regardless of the outcome, you feel good about how you handled yourself. Being a winning woman doesn't mean you'll always get everything you want, but it does mean you'll go after your goals in ways that are authentic, intentional, skillful, and mature.
Straight-talking pitbull of personal development, Larry Wingate, motivational speaker, best-selling author, and TV personality, brings us Your Kids Are Your Own Fault, a guide for raising responsible, productive adults. And he proclaims, this is not a fix your kid book. It's the fix the way you parent book. You owe it to your kids to parent with a plan. Being a parent is the toughest job in the world. Don't I know it? Wingate has never been one to shy away from tough truths, and he writes, with no hesitation, that kids today are overindulged, overentertained, underachieving, and underdisciplined, with a sense of entitlement that is crippling society. Well-behaved, respectful kids are the exception, not the rule, don't you agree? And for the most part, parents are to blame. Responsible parenting is about beginning with the end in mind and parenting with a plan. Most parents have never stopped to consider what kind of adult they want to raise. They don't have a plan for the end product. Larry's message to parents as he narrates the book, teach your kids to become the best adults they can be, but don't expect your kids to improve until you improve.
Here's what it comes down to. All societal problems could pretty much be prevented through better parenting. Are there exceptions? Of course there are. There are always exceptions, so don't bother raising any with me. I know about them already. My point is that for the most part, the problems in our society exist because of lousy training from mama and daddy. And don't bring up the whole a lot of people don't have a mama and daddy to teach them, Larry. I am aware. For now, I'll give all those people a pass. Not for long. No one gets a pass for long. Even the people who didn't have parents, had lousy parents, or were raised by wolves, sooner or later have to learn and demonstrate personal responsibility. But it still goes back to the fact that kids learn or don't learn their values and what is and isn't acceptable behavior from their parents. Those kids grow into adults and practice that behavior in their personal and professional lives, creating a society that reflects the cumulative result of parental training. Meaning, messed up society, messed up parenting. Want to fix the world? Fix the parents. The only reason we have stupid kids is because we have such stupid parents. The goal of this audiobook is to fix stupid kids by fixing their stupid parents. And that means don't expect to change your kids' behavior unless you are willing to change your own. I like the way the novelist Lois McMaster Bujold puts it. Children might or might not be a blessing, but to create them and then fail them was surely damnation. For those of you who are familiar with my work, you know by now that I am a one-trick pony. This means that there is one central theme in all that I do. That central theme is personal responsibility. In my first book, Shut Up, Stop Whining, and Get a Life, A Kick-Butt Approach to a Better Life, I emphasized my theme in terms of personal development. In It's Called Work for a Reason, Your Success is Your Own Damn Fault, I exploited my message of personal responsibility in the area of business. Then I used it again in You're Broke Because You Want to Be, How to Stop Getting By and Start Getting Ahead in the area of personal finance. I followed that up with The Idiot Factor, the 10 ways we sabotage our life, money, and business. In that book, I once more pound home the idea that you must take control of every area of your life, stop blaming others for your problems, and be willing to do whatever it takes to create the life you want. 4 books with the central theme of personal responsibility. And I'm back again to harp on that theme. this time in the area of parenting. Our society is a mess today and will only get worse because parents are not taking responsibility for teaching their kids the principles of how to lead successful, productive lives. That trend has to stop and stop now. My intention is to turn that cycle of destruction around here. I have great kids, Larry. I don't need this. I know you have great kids. All kids are great. And if you don't believe it, just ask their parents. Rather than argue that point, I'm going to give in and just say all kids in the beginning are great kids. Kids come into this world as blank slates that you, the parent, get to write on. Whatever you write on that slate will determine whether your kid will turn into a great adult or whether he will become a leech on society. So while your kid is a great kid, that isn't really the point, is it? The real point is to teach your kids to become the best adult version of themselves they can be. Is this program for you? It's for the parents who love their kids, want the best for them, and are willing to do whatever it takes to turn that kid into a great adult. Maybe they just need a reminder of what's really important and that it's time to get back to the basics. Or maybe they need a wake-up call so they can turn a bad situation around. Or maybe they need a kick in the pants to tell them they have been messing up and they need to get back in control of their family. This audio is for the millions of hard-working parents with normal situations and regular kids who want to raise these kids to be responsible adults who will make a good living, be good people who do the right thing, and grow up to raise their own good kids. It's for the single mom and the weekend dad, and for the parents who have solid marriages. It's for parents like those who are serious about raising responsible children.
Comedian Steve Harvey gives women around the globe insight into what men really think about love, intimacy, and commitment. In his new book, Straight Talk, No Chaser, How to Find, Keep, and Understand a Man, Harvey zeroes in on what motivates men and provides tips on how women can use that knowledge to get more of what they want and need out of relationships. Harvey shares information on how to get the truth out of your man, dating tips decade by decade, and how to minimize nagging and maximize harmony at home. Plus, Steve offers up candid answers to questions you've always wanted to ask men. Direct, often funny, and incredibly perceptive, entertainer, and finally happily married husband, Harvey proves once again that he is the king of relationships. The book is read by the author.
What I found, though, was that act like a lady, think like a man simply wasn't enough. As I hosted relationship seminars across the country, I discovered that no matter how thoroughly I thought I'd explained what motivates men, women still had innumerable questions about why men act and react the way we do in various romantic situations. If I told a group of women that men are driven solely by what they do for a living, how much they make, and who they are, women wanted to know why stability is more important to men than falling in love. If I said men show their love by providing for, professing to, and protecting their significant other, my audience wanted to know why men can't love the way women love. By leading with their hearts. For every question I answered in the chapter, quick answers to the questions you've always wanted to ask, from what do men find sexy, and do you mind if your woman doesn't work, to are men okay with their women having male friends, and is getting on a mom's side important, there were 50 more topics I hadn't addressed. There was also quite a bit of dissension. Some questioned why I counsel women to hold off sleeping with a man for at least 90 days while she investigated his intentions. Some argued that if they dare institute standards and requirements and tell men up front they were looking for serious relationships, they would run off guys who might be interested in them. Others questioned whether I, a twice-divorced comedian, am qualified to give advice to women on how to have a long-term successful relationship. All of these questions, observations, reservations, and demands for clarification and more answers reminded me that women are absolutely the most inquisitive creatures God has created. And no matter how many ways I explain something to my wife, my daughters, my female friends and colleagues, and especially my Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man readers, women are simply going to want to hear the answers more ways than my first book had to offer. And no matter how often I or any other man says they should maybe think and act a little differently in their dealings with men, they're hesitant. Part of this is because other women, mothers, aunts, older female relatives, girlfriends, and mostly female editors of women's magazines have been the ones primarily to guide and influence the way women conduct themselves in relationships with men. Rare are the times when men offer up their thoughts on dating and commitment, much less tell women how to make a relationship work. Consequently, when a man does speak up and out on the subject, it often seems to go against all of the advice women have previously received. So I understand some women's hesitancy to embrace the tactical advice I offered up. I get the fear it may have induced. That's to say that your questions, concerns, complaints, and shouts registered with me. Let me know that I needed to go deeper into my explanations about why men do the things that we do so that women can get an even broader understanding of how to either find the man of their dreams or tighten the relationships they're already in and find satisfaction in their own strength, courage, power, and wisdom. This time around, I get to the bottom of why men never seem to do what you want them to do when you want them to do it, how to get the most out of your men sexually, and what men think about dating from decade to decade, from ages 20 on up. I also give a more in-depth visit to both the most popular and more controversial topics sparked by discussions surrounding Act Like a Lady, Think Like a Man, including what men really think about the long-held notion that we're intimidated by strong, independent women, creative ways to get a man to keep honoring your standards and requirements, learning how to ask men the right questions to get their truthful answers, and tested ways to get a real man to commit to you. My hope is that when you finish reading this book and really think about the information I'm sharing with you, you'll have an even more informed understanding of men, and certainly an appreciation of how incredibly simple we are. We come at every situation from the same angle, using the same principles, seldom deviating. There's really no use applying your thought process to the relationship equation or expecting your man to adopt your logic when it comes to dating and mating. You can't, after all, change men.
As the winner of the 2010 Ironman Championship in Kona, Hawaii, Chris Macca McCormick is one of the world's greatest athletes. In I'm Here to Win, a World Champion's Advice for Peak Performance, McCormick, with Tim VandeHei, shares his story, along with training tips and practical advice to help listeners develop their own routines, diet, exercise programs, and strategies. Chris McCormick has dedicated his life to training for and winning the Ironman World Championships. This grueling test of mental and physical endurance challenges athletes to swim 2.4 miles, bike 112 miles, and run a full marathon of 26.2 miles, all while battling harsh conditions and their own willpower. In 2010, McCormick won the Ironman World Championship for the second time at 37 years old, a testament to his fitness and endurance. Macca's journey to athletic greatness is more than just one of physical perseverance. After coming in fourth in Hawaii last year, Macca returned to the island chanting, "I'm here to win." He had a new mental game plan in place that brought him first across the finish line. Macca shares his playbook and reveals everything it takes, mind, body, and spirit, to become a champion. I'm Here to Win, narrated by the author and Howard Bruner, provides riveting insight into the mind of a great champion. Let's listen.
Nice career, Macca. Thanks for everything. Time to make room for a new generation. It was a shock. I was the most accomplished triathlete on the planet at any distance, had already proved that I could win in Kona, and had come in fourth in 2009, yet I was being written off as irrelevant. It just goes to show you how quickly you can be dismissed in favour of the next big thing. Kona, 2008 and 2009. The thing is, I knew I could win in 2010. In 2008, my bike failure had torn me apart because I hadn't even had the chance to defend my title. I never said a word about it. Kona is a very small place and I didn't want to take anything away from Craig or the other competitors by making excuses. I have too much respect for them and for the sport. After my gear breakdown forced me to quit in the bike stage, I went back to my room at the King Kamehameha Hotel, watched the top pros finish the bike stage and start the marathon, and saw Craig cross the line to win his first title. I've been left off Olympic teams and had a lot of things happen in my career, but that was the most difficult thing I have ever dealt with in the sport. I felt cheated. An equipment failure makes all the time, training, suffering and pain meaningless. I hadn't lost. The race had been stolen from me by something beyond my control. It was galling. I went away and studied the event, and I came back in 2009 ready to challenge Craig. Kona was a race that suited him. He's a smaller guy and he loves the heat and humidity, which are always a part of the challenge of Kona. I knew he was coming into his own in Hawaii, but in the pre-race interviews I said, Crowy, Craig Alexander's nickname, has borrowed my title and has never beaten me in Kona, which he hadn't. Since I'd been forced to drop out because of an equipment failure, he hadn't really defeated me mano a mano. I've raced him since 1994 in Australia, and in maybe 100 races he's beaten me 4 times. I know he feels the pressure of that. Not everyone appreciated me saying that. Speaking my mind hasn't always made me popular. But I was simply highlighting the fact that his bike is his weakness, telling everyone how I was going to win and creating some self-doubt in Craig, playing the mental game I've used so effectively over the years. Well, you know what they say about best laid plans. In 2009 I had a terrible swim. I put myself in a position to win on the bike, but Craig ultimately caught me on the run. He's one of the best marathoners ever to compete at Kona and won his second consecutive title. And that was it. Macca's done. But I knew that even after taking my awful swim into account, my 2009 performance had been spectacular, perhaps even better than my win in 2007. I lost 3.5 minutes in the swim for reasons we've still never figured out. I was behind blokes I've never been behind in my whole career. This is the problem with some people in our sport. They watch results, not races. If they knew anything about the trends of an athlete, they would have said, hold on, there's something wrong with Macca's swim there. I'd never swum 54 minutes. I'd always swum 50. I was on the back foot from the swim, fought to catch the front group on the bike and rode minutes into them. I cut into their lead. Then I fell apart in the marathon, dropped back to 7th and pulled myself together to come in 4th in the event, 4 minutes down from the winner. If I have a more typical swim and don't lose those 3.5 minutes early on, then boom, I'm only 30 seconds down from the leader and racing Craig for the title. So I wasn't deluding myself. It wasn't that I couldn't compete with the guys who had finished ahead of me in the swim. I knew I could. Believe me, I never want to be the worn-out heavyweight boxer who keeps coming back looking for one more night of glory only to get his face punched in. Every athlete can feel when it's time to quit. When it's time for me to retire, I'll be happy to go home and spend more time with my wife and daughters. But in 2009, I didn't feel that way. Even as everybody in the sport was busy writing my obituary, I was ready to show that reports of my demise were premature. Hacking the race. When I said I was coming back to Kona in 2010, everyone was stunned. I heard the word dinosaur a few times. People said things like, here goes McCormack gobbing off again. He needs to convince himself so he goes out and tells anyone who will listen what he's going to do to win the event. He's a dreamer. He could never drop these guys on the bike and Alexander's too good a runner. Macca's too old. He can't do it. Well, I knew I could win. In the off-season, I did what so many other triathletes don't do. I broke down the race and looked at it strategically. I think of myself as a computer hacker looking for a way to break into a system. When I watched film of the 2009 race, I saw that the runners were winning the event because of how the rest of us were handling the bike stage. I noticed that on the bike, from mile marker 40 to mile marker 80, where we turn off the Queen K Highway and head up to the turnaround at the town of Harvey, the riders were tending to settle in instead of pushing to get position on other athletes. The area is notorious for its treacherous crosswinds and everybody was playing it safe in the winds.
There is so much to work on in our lives, but hopefully, with things being a little less frenetic in the summer, you can pick a personal project and stick to it. I hope you've heard some titles that got you thinking. Has a book you've read inspired you? Drop me a line. I'd love to share it with other listeners. Go to bookreportradio.com and click on Reader's Corner, or send an email to elaine@bookreportradio.com. Thanks so much for joining me today, and I look forward to being together again next week on The Book Report.